Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Yesterday, Andrew called Bucky's to find out they have coffee, but they don't have donuts. And then we got a whole list of magazines, which included Muffler and Transmission Monthly, or what
exhaust.
Was it?
Muffler and Exhaust.
Are those the same? I guess they were two magazines were competing against one another. And then in the 80s.
They merged.
Guys,
and then went out of business.
No, they're still in business. They got the
From 1984.
When was it? Call there and find out the latest edition of Muffler and Exhaust magazine at Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Andrew. Jacob, what are you doing saying no?
I wasn't saying no. I was shaking my head in disappointment.
Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations. They got great periodicals.
Periodicals. That's perfect. You're a librarian at heart, John.
I went to the Philadelphia Free Library to figure out how to get into television, and the lady told me there's a periodical over there. I went, a hunna what? Have you ever been in a library before? Oh, that's how you pronounce it. Library.
Yeah.
Snohomish County man. This is the news that broke yesterday. Ursula came in with it. In the United States, first known case of Wuhan. What do they call it? A core...
Coronavirus.
Yeah.
The beer, Corona.
Okay.
Here comes a doctor explaining from the Everett Clinic, says the man who contracted the virus did everything right.
He did a great service to the community and to himself by informing his providers that he had traveled.
Yeah. That, by the way, you read what this guy did. It's like, that's textbook.
Right? Yes.
Felt a little something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know what? I'm going to go get checked out. Here is your governor.
The good news is the CDC, and we also agree that the risk is low to residents of the state of Washington. And this is certainly not a moment for panic or high anxiety. It is a moment for vigilance. There isn't a risk level that would suggest people should be doing anything differently than they normally would. We should all do exactly what we always do, which is this is flu season, so we wash our hands. We cover our mouths when we sneeze.
How's the patient doing, Tom? Do you want to know? Why don't you ask the question?
Sure. Okay. How's the patient doing, John?
He is in satisfactory condition.
Jay?
And as of this...
Jay's the attending physician?
This moment is being is very helpful in us identifying particular people that he may have been in contact with.
Okay.
What's odd to me is that they are screening for these very types of people who've been to the Wuhan province in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, in New York, but not here. Why not here? We've got the first case. How is it? And they did say that he did travel to another airport before he landed in Seattle, but they're not divulging which one.
Well, they test them. So they're diverting all flights to any of those airports. And
now,
then as you step off, and I was trying to find out how they test. Apparently, it's fairly sophisticated. They're going to share with other airports as well to determine whether or not the person might have this contracted.
I saw video on people on planes, and they would go up to them, and they kind of like, you know, do test something, you know.
Oh, that's a temperature.
Take the monitor thing, swipe it across your forehead. Okay, yeah. Just for people leaving the province to see if they have a fever. He, by the way, had no symptoms on the flight over.
Yeah.
It wasn't until he got back here, sitting there watching the news, feels a little cold coming on. Says, wait a minute, I just came from that province. Mm-hmm. I maybe better have this checked out.
What are they doing in response?
We have a very comprehensive approach that is acting very quickly to respond.
Will he mention climate change? There's 9 seconds left, yes or no?
Yes.
Come on, it's
you are no fun.
To identify the potential folks who may be subject to transmission and also obviously care for the individual who's involved.
As the earth heats up. Let's see. This is our doctor saying airplanes make these kinds of situations so concerning.
In a given day, there are over 60,000 flights around the world. And diseases now spread much, much faster than before airplanes came along.
Okay. So I look to see what they did. China did, the great socialist country of China. In SARS in 2003, they kept it from the World Health Organization until February of the next year, and 774 people died. There was a guy that came forward, a doctor, who basically said, hey, there's this disease. And he got the Human Rights Award and was supposed to come to the United States to receive the award.
Oh, no.
Guess what?
He was put in prison.
Yeah.
Till really?
2014.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, why do you scoff at China being a socialist country?
I mean, thing is, if every time there was something bad that happened in the United States, we'd introduce it as a capitalist country, because it's communist doesn't
no, it's
mean
socialist.
That,
it's not communist, it's socialist.
Well, you're using that to try to bash liberal Democrats by saying, oh, it's socialist.
No, this is socialist.
So every bad thing. Well, okay, John.
The president was red China,
then it was communist China.
I'm showing this is an example of what happens under socialism.
Yeah, that's baloney.
It is not. People lie all the time for all sorts of reasons
and bad things happen.
We control the press. We control medical. The socialism is what goes on in China. And just pointing out, that's what happens in China.
You're embarrassing yourself.
I'm not. I'm pointing out in the 3.5-hour speech given by the president of China, he mentioned socialism 73 times.
I think the reason this guy came forward and China is now being much more open about this is because of the new trade policy that President Trump just signed 2 days ago. Congratulations. Mm. Thank you, President Trump.
That's good. I also would say that they probably are being a little bit more careful now because they have loosened up just a little bit and they don't want to have a bad name when it comes to killing or imprisoning any more of their people. Right. They've learned a lesson from their other SARS problem. Let's see. The female leaders, Tom, occasionally they crack a joke and things backfire on them. Funny jokes, well written by somebody, well delivered by the candidate. But then you end up getting people going after them, explaining that the woman seems insensitive or snarky or mean.
This is one of those hard to pinpoint discussions about how we see different genders.
Yes.
That men can get away with a certain kind of joke that a woman can't, and is that fair? If the delivery is the same and the joke is the same, are our social mores, you know, such that it's tricky territory for especially female candidates, but also women in the business world? That's what this article looks at.
Here's Elizabeth Warren. She was at a marriage, talking about marriage at a CNN town hall event. Realize now that this entire exchange was scripted. The person that asked the question was written for the response.
Why give that away now? It's better to try to listen to it purely and then
because people are going to listen to it and go, oh, come on, that is so scripted. Because we're not going to talk about the fact that it's scripted. That's not the interesting thing. I think the response to the punchline is the interesting thing.
Yes. Hi, Senator. Thank you for being here. Let's say you're on the campaign trail and you're approached.
Have you have been, yes.
And a supporter approaches you and says, Senator, I'm old-fashioned, and my faith teaches me that marriage is between one man and one woman. What is your response?
Well, I'm...
Look how the guy slipped into a little bit of a Southern accent.
Oh, I know. Is that... Where is this? Is it in the South?
No.
Well, that's...
I can't remember. It was way back in October, so this is a while ago. But it was a CNN event.
October.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that.
I'm old-fashioned, and my faith teaches me that marriage is between one man and one woman. What is your response?
Well, I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that. And I'm going to say, then just marry one woman. I'm cool with that.
Everything's fine.
That's good.
That's good.
Yeah. Good.
Good. Well, get that. Good.
Any more writing?
Yes.
She waits.
Assuming you can find one.
Boom!
That's what you want. You hit him just slightly, and then you finish him off, which she did with that joke. And what'd the guy do? Oh!
Yeah. So, putting aside the thing that turns out that was all scripted,
mm-hmm.
on YouTube, yes. lots of people thought it was hilarious, showed how quick-witted Warren was. Again, this is all before we knew... it was scripted. And I don't know how literally scripted it was.
Mm-hmm.
But a ways down, there were some people that started to take offense at this.
Oh, boy.
What a pre-planned, snarky, mean-spirited response she made, wrote one. Scorn, wrote another. Mockery, contempt, self-congratulations. But hey, worked for Hillary, am I right? It raises the issue that the people that didn't like that give and take
yes.
really took it out on her
uh-huh.
because they thought it was a cheap shot. And can men get away with cheap shots and women can't? Because I would say scorn, mockery, contempt, self-congratulation, that is the very template for Donald Trump
yeah.
and people eat it up. When a woman does it, are we harsher because it's unexpected? The question is, do we still have, despite all of the feminist advances that we've made over the last 30, 40, 50 years, do we still think women should be the comforting ones, the ones that aren't mean and snarky, mm-hmm. that don't really crack a joke at your expense? They're really more loving and we, but men, oh man, you know, hey, yeah, that's how men are.
Yeah.
Do we still operate under those old rubrics, even though our politics might indicate that that's not the case, or that shouldn't be the case? Do you? I think that's probably true.
That what? We don't like the snark?
Yes. I think that we don't like the snark in our candidates, at least. For instance, I don't know anybody who's snarkier than Samantha Bee.
Mm-hmm.
She is a really smart-ass kind of a liberal woman, and I think her delivery is fine. It's perfect. It's funny. That's not a problem, although she has gotten in trouble when she's gone after other women, like Trump's daughter, I think it was.
Yeah.
She had apologized. C-word,
yeah.
But other than that, I think that we can accept it in some formats, but not, I think, among our leaders, whereas I do think we give more. And I think I'm as probably as guilty as anybody else about that, that I just, there's certain expectation. You go, wow, that's really harsher coming from women, even though it's no, the words are identical.
Well, I guess it's the idea of the double standard. The double standard is always there. So if that had been a male candidate standing up there and a female asked the question, and then the male candidate ends up with a zinger, that's if you can find a guy. Commenting on whether or not the woman is attractive or not. Oh, my God, that guy would be taken out and scurred and they would
That's
whip
really
him.
That's really good.
Right. So, yes. But she can do it because women are allowed to make fun of Chris Christie's weight because it's a woman making fun of a man's weight.
Because
have a guy
men are
stand
always
up
on
there.
The weight.
No, have a man stand up there and comment on a woman's size, and again, the guy would be killed, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so
that's interesting. That's
a woman
true.
Can do a certain type of humor,
yes.
And a man can do a certain type of humor, and we just accept there's a double
there's
standard.
There's different kind. Okay, that's right, because I do think women can make a crack at a man's expense because men are seen as in positions of authority, and so they're throwing up. Whereas when a man goes after a woman, it's like he's punching down.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's all perceived that is that way.
Yeah, but- no, I know. Yeah. But it's also, I mean, I think that we all perceive people differently based on gender when it comes to politics and probably in the business world. They talk in this article, they talked to a lot of women. They said, yeah, that basically, if you're talking to a bunch of women, I talked to my wife who, you know, does professional presentations. She says, when it's just a group of women, mm-hmm. you can make kind of jokes and all the women are in on it. But when they're men present, the thing is that men will take, you know, will have different expectations. And the advice that business presentation teachers give is that you're better off women just not using humor at all. Just straightforward. No, but they say because they're trouble spots. That you don't know how it's going to play. You don't know how to play the room necessarily. And when men are there, it's just you're just safer because you never know what's going to kind of blow up in your face.
Oh, that's bad advice. Who's giving that advice?
Well, I mean, professionals.
Oh, professionals
yeah. whose job it is to give advice.
Okay, fine. Don't take that advice. Humor always works. I've seen so many speeches, many keynotes. Women give it or a man gives it.
Yeah.
Woman throws a joke in there. It's great. Guy throws a joke in there. Just, are you going after somebody with the joke? I'm writing a bunch of jokes because I have to go to Roanoke this weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just go to town on Matt Shea and Inslee.
Okay.
Can
I help?
You want to write some jokes?
Matt Shea jokes, sure.
Matt Shea jokes. And I wrote my friend Todd Meyer, and I said, hey, is Matt Shea going to be there?
Oh, yeah.
Then you think, well, do you change the joke at all?
Yeah. One woman, by the way, they cite it's a successful politician who knew how to tell a joke and got away with it.
Margaret Thatcher.
She never told a joke in her life, did she?
Hell, she did.
Well, Ann Richards is who they cited. Ann Richards.
Poor George, born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Yes.
Yeah.
She managed to pull it off. She was great. And I don't know if it's, you know, if it's her stature in Texas politics because she comes from Texas, because she was in her 60s, I think, when she was a governor and all this, that she managed to pull it off. But it's tricky waters, they say, for women, and it's societal double standards. But as you point out, double standards can flip the other way, too. If a man looks like he's punching down on a woman, he's going to get taken to the woodshed,
Barbara
too.
Bush had a pretty good sense of humor. She cracked some good jokes.
She was pretty.
What's that face for?
Well, I mean, when she used
Tom
the
would have made a face.
B word. On, was it Geraldine Ferraro something? It was like, it wasn't funny. It was like she was serious about it. She didn't see it as a punchline. She was just mad.
Yeah, I got it.
Derek Jeter falls one vote shy of getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And how many? So one vote, and how many voted altogether?
367.
Have we found out who the guy is?
No, and we might not, because you do not have to sign your ballot. Now, my guess is some enterprising journalists will contact every single voting member because they're listening. They say, did you? Speaking of this, yesterday I watch Around the Horn a lot, and there's one guy, Tim Kalishaw from Dallas, who's a voting member. And they were asking him, this is before they had announced the vote, and he says, so, Tim, you're a voting member. Did you vote for him? Do you think he should be unanimous? And he says, let me tell you the kind of pressure I'm under. I woke up in a cold sweat last night thinking, oh, my God. Did I forget to check Derek Jeter? He says, I don't want to be the one guy who doesn't. He says, so I got up, I opened up the envelope, I looked, whew, no, I did vote for him. He patched it back in and sent it in. So I'm wondering if that guy who didn't vote for him is thinking, I do not need this grief right now.
Do you think the guy that didn't vote or the gal that didn't vote was thinking, I won't be the only one?
Yeah, I know, maybe. Well, wouldn't it be hilarious if it was really an oversight? He just, what? Of course I voted for Derek Jeter and you didn't. You'll never live it down.
It's like the great stories of the firing squad that only one is given the bullet and everybody else. No. Everybody's got the bullet. You don't know who's got the blank.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Okay. Anyway, but
you assume that I fire the blank.
Yeah. You would pull the trigger and you don't know one of you at least killed him.
Right.
Maybe there are more because they don't want to
have. So let's say there's five guys.
Yeah.
Do four of them have a live round and one does not?
I think
that's a better way to go, because let's say only four had fakes and one had a real.
And he missed.
And he missed.
Yeah, I know. That's like a Monty Python sketch.
What are the chances? What are the chances? By the way, Monty Python, you mentioned it, Tom. We'll get to it a little later on. That Terry Jones from Monty Python, I don't know which one that is, but...
He directed a lot of their movies.
We'll play some cuts from him.
He had the high-pitched woman's voice lots of times.
So he must have been doing jokes
as
a woman. Yes. By the way, anybody who does an article based upon people's responses either on Twitter or comments, like the person not understanding or going after Elizabeth Warren for being snarky, anybody that doesn't understand that it's a joke, you immediately discount that individual.
Wow. Okay, I will.
That's my rule. And Jacob agrees with that as well. Hey, Rachel Bell stops by right back.
No snark.
Write to us at the State Roofing text line, 989-973-989-973. Well, it's also, don't forget about Muckleshoot Casino. They'll tell you right now that you're never going to get a bad beat when it comes to Rachel Bell swinging in.
A bad beat is when you're
losing a hand that was favored to win. That's a term, bad beat.
I know that. I know everything about Muckleshoot Casino.
All right.
Ask me anything about
what
cards.
What is a BB?
It's a thing you put into a gun.
Right.
It's also what we called my great aunt, Bernice.
And by the way, that leads you into your story beautifully.
It does. Yes. So there is a new book out called Grandmothering, and I get a lot of email pitches, and a lot of people send you things. Why are you sending me this? This has nothing to do with what I cover and what I do for work.
This doesn't involve food?
No, I'm like, people send us romance novels. It's what kind of coverage are you expecting to get out of this? So this one, I actually scanned the press release, and the thing that I found most interesting was there is an evolutionary role for grandmothers. So there's this book, it's called Grandmothering. It's by Dr. Kathleen Stasserberger. She is a grandmother. She's also a professor at the Bronx Community College, and she is a psychologist. And so she said for years, scientists were puzzled over grandmothers. Like, what is their role? Because they would hit menopause at about 50, and then why would they live another 30 years?
Every other mammal, except for elephants and whales, has menopause and then dies within a year. What our culture needs is somebody who is no longer bearing children, but able to take care of grandchildren. It's called the grandmother hypothesis. It's no longer a hypothesis, but proven. Notice that human males don't do this. Human males can conceive children even when they're 80. So it is very interesting. It's a grandmother hypothesis.
So long ago, the role of grandmothers was to literally further the human race. A lot of the time, they were the midwives and they were helping the younger women have children. That is no longer the case. Now they are here to offer emotional support. So she says, genetically, and what happens with age because of certain hormones like, what is it here? Oxytocin that everybody has inside of them, but at different points in your life, you have more or less. Mm-hmm. So that is what makes older people, specifically women, more patient and more optimistic. And so the idea is this is a person to have in your child's life who is a good listener, who is a different role than the parent because there's different stakes there, that is there to love this child. So she also talks about how hard it is sometimes for parents and grandparents to get along. If you read advice columns, you see letters all the time about the intrusive grandmother and the grandmother who has a different parenting style, and they offer way too much unsolicited advice.
I want grandmothers to know that their main job is to support the family, not to correct their daughters and daughters-in-law. Because if they do, they become a problem rather than an asset. You know, I think about husbands and wives, they disagree too on how to raise the children. And ideally, they talk to each other and say, okay, we'll do this. And they are presenting a united front. That's what grandmothers should do too.
Something funny she pointed out that I hadn't thought about is the image of grandmothers in children's book and even in media. There is a certain look that you always see.
Right now in the United States, most women become grandmothers at age 50. Most 50-year-old women, they have jobs, they work. Books, on the other hand, picture grandmothers as older women with no jobs in the kitchen with their hair in a bun. That is not your typical 50-year-old woman in this culture at all. Now, maybe at 70, but still, grandmothers are much more alive and well and nurturing and well-groomed than the pictures in the books.
The problem with that, though, is that if 50-year-old grandmothers, which seems a little young for grandmothers, but still, if they're working, they will not be able to fulfill their grandmotherly function because they have a full, you know, a lot on their plate as well. I wonder if evolutionarily, this woman inadvertently is arguing that women shouldn't be working because it interferes with the grandmotherly role.
I don't think so. She works still.
I know, and obviously.
She still goes, I don't know what her schedule is, but every day she picks up two of her grandchildren from school.
She does.
And so she says that is her support. It's 2 hours a day that she supports her daughter and her son-in-law, and also that's her time to bond. And she says she makes a special effort to bond with the children, even if she's not interested in what they're interested in, which I find when I'm hanging out with my friends' kids, I am like, ugh. You know, she's like, I don't know what Minecraft is. I'm trying to learn about it. She's like, I don't like the Pink Panther, but my grandson likes to watch it, so I sit and I listen and... Yeah. She's trying to fulfill that role of being this loving touchstone in the kids' lives where, I mean, it's just the stereotypes. You know, it's like the grandparents spoil where the parents have to discipline. And, of course, this isn't true with everyone because there's mean grandma out there.
If a kid spends time with the grandparents, the kid is less likely to be depressed. If the kid spends time with the grandparents, the kid's life expectancy is increased. If the grandparents spend time with the kids, the grandkids, the, dementia is put off. They have also live longer. It works better with grandfathers than grandmothers, but a grandfather's life expectancy will increase if the grandfather spends time with the children.
It's symbiotic, you see.
Yeah.
So like a muscle on the back of a whale. Like a barnacle on a rock.
Okay, stop.
Wait, stop her. Stop her.
Do you have grandkids? You don't have grandkids yet. Okay.
No.
All right.
And I'm not.
I do.
I'm not dying to have them.
Why not?
No, I just think. I think it's interesting the gender
Tom,
distinction.
You weren't listening to me. If you have them, you won't die.
No, I know. Oh, I heard that. Maybe there is a reason. But it is interesting the gender distinction because my wife, she has a full, you know, professional life right now. But I think she'd love to have grandkids. She's like, oh yeah, she'd want to help, you know, her daughter, or, you know, daughters raise.
Why don't you want
kids?
Why do you wish your daughters to have wisdom wounds
like me?
No, I don't want them to. I'm just personally not looking forward. Oh wow! I want to spend more time with my grandkids now. If I realize that's better than taking a lifelong pill, maybe I'll do that. But I got things to do.
Wait a minute!
You should be more excited for them.
This is so odd coming from you.
Why?
First of all, they're not even born yet,
exactly.
And already you don't want to spend time with
them. That's why I can tell. Right now, I can say this because it's not a rejection of any kid. I'm not looking forward to having grandkids. Once I have a grandkid, it's like, I never want pets. But once we get a pet, once I have a dog or a cat there, I cannot. They say, Dad, you play with the cats and the dogs all the time. I know. Once I have them, I can't stop myself. So as long as I don't have them, then I got my own time.
That actually makes sense for his personality, though, because Tom lives in the moment more than most people. So I don't know if you know this about Tom, but when he goes on a vacation, he rarely takes a photograph because he likes to enjoy where he is instead of worrying about capturing the moment for later. So I can understand that you are someone who appreciates things while they're happening and you don't look to the future to have that anticipation.
No, he's already looking to the future and not wanting to have grandkids.
No, I'm not needing grandkids. My life is so full now. If I get grandkids, I'll take care of them. I'll love and treasure them, but I just soon have a little space between raising them and having them.
You should encourage your daughters, though, because this wizened womb, it's a big burden. I have to sweep out cobwebs for 2 hours every day. Is that what you want for your children?
Sweeping out cobwebs in your wizened womb?
I have to oil it and season it like a cast iron pan.
All right. The womb is too close to other parts of your body we don't want to get into. Whoops, didn't mean to say it that way.
Wow.
Yikes.
Wow. What other parts were those?
That was unscripted.
Unlike the rest of the show.
Fortunately.
It's your only
excuse. Where Jacob writes us out scripts.
I know, Lariana County. There we go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the Tom and Curly Show. 9 to noon every day, whether you like it or not. Right, Tom?
Huh? You bet. Right. Forever in a day.
Forever in a day. Rachel finally left. You guys talking movies.
That's right.
Look at that annoying. Democrats.
John's not the center of attention.
Well, I was talking about my boots.
2 minutes. Yes.
No, I'm talking about my boots.
Your shoes.
My shoes, which are called boots.
Which have about 30 seconds worth of interest, and you were trying to extend it into a 3 minutes.
Rach and I are involved in a conversation. We're talking about my boots.
And then she got bored and turned to me and said,
she did.
Hey,
you
saw Parasite
in,
last night. Okay. I did not jump in.
Stole it.
Ooh, we're battling over Belle.
She was my friend first.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, she was.
I've known her for 20 years.
You have not.
15, at least. I knew her in her first, rendition here at Cairo. Then she quit, and then she came back.
Yeah, but knowing her and being her friend is a different story.
Oh, I see.
What was that word we learned at the beginning of the show? Pettifog?
I feel like pettifoggery.
Democrats may not hold a hearing on the domestic terrorism accusation against Representative Matt Shea. Let's see. Here comes the press conference yesterday.
If we can't achieve a supermajority, I think we'd have to think about what kind of voice we want to give to someone who's been found to be a domestic terrorist on the floor of the House.
We also don't want to have Representative Shea take away the good work that we're doing here in the legislature.
Okay, so to be a domestic terrorist, the committing of a terrorist act in the perpetrator's own country against their fellow citizens. So Matt Shea has been accused of it, but in this country, I think you are still innocent until proven guilty.
Well, no,
right?
But there was an investigation. The legislature had an investigation, and the investigation determined that he was a domestic terrorist. That's the investigation.
That's investigation. That's the charge.
Right.
But still, he is innocent until proven guilty. So the investigation says we have reason to believe. They'd have to bring him up on some trial.
Right,
the trial would occur in the House there in Olympia.
And
it would basically say you got to get two-thirds.
And the Republicans
to kick
are
him
so
out.
Comfortable with domestic terrorism that they do not want to vote against him. They have tried to clean him out of their, their committee assignments and all. They suspended Shea from their caucus. So then the question is, should we vote him out? If all the Republicans said yes, let's vote him out, then obviously it would happen. The Democrats would gladly go along. But if they don't feel like they've got enough to kick him out, why give him the floor? He benefits from this. Right now, I think the Democrats are making a smart move, even though this is not their intent, at least their proclaimed intent. He's the Republicans' problem.
Yes.
And if the Republicans don't want to get rid of him, want to be associated with him, then the Democrats probably profit from him. Matt Shea, we did a story last week, John, that he now has more popularity because of his anti-federal government stance than before he was charged with or accused of domestic terrorism. So. Mm-hmm. Why give him, more oxygen?
Well, they have neutered him to the point that he's not on any committee, right? And they just sort of shut him out entirely?
Yeah, they suspended him from their caucus. I don't know what, he lost his committee assignment. I don't know that, his vote will still count.
Yes.
The fact that they have him still there, does it just in some way besmirch the character of Republicans in the great state of Washington?
I think a little bit.
I don't know. Eastern Washington, he won overwhelmingly. That's, the interesting thing will be, hey, he runs again.
Yes.
And then you say, hey, Matt, we want to support you, but you have absolutely no power. You can't do anything for us.
Yeah.
Boy, talk about a vulnerable candidate. Anybody should be able to beat him.
Except that I think there's enough anti-government feeling about all governments at all levels that they may say, yeah, that's okay. We'll put you in there just to be a thorn in their side. You have no power, but you probably have no power anyway. You're living in a blue state as opposed to a red state. So we'll just vote for you as a symbol of shaking the fist at the powers that be. I think that's how he will survive. I think Matt Shea will be in there next election and the election after that even.
Okay. Well, then that's the voice of the people.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, fine then. You're all right with Matt Shea being there?
Well, personally, I'd rather have a Democrat in there, but as from one Republican to another, he's probably the least effective Republican available, so I could live with that.
They're all fairly ineffective now. I'm still trying to find out if he's going to be there at Roanoke.
And you will not dare make a joke at his expense if he's there?
I did one at his expense last year, and it got a three-parter on reaction. There was a pause of silence.
He didn't
which
go
is
there,
okay.
Did he?
Yeah, it's a big wave. There's all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So it got a pause. And then it got a whoa, followed by another pause, and then it got laughter, like some.
Some? Four? Five? How many, John? How many people laughed?
And then there was a little bit of silence, and then like, whoa, moaning.
And groans.
There's a four-parter on the reaction. He's an easy target.
Yes.
And these are all Republicans.
Yeah, no, I know. That. I think that's what's rich about it.
Yes,
yeah.
It's good stuff.
Ian Eyman.
Yeah, Eyman's there, and everybody blasts away at Eyman, and he's there too. By the way, and then on Saturday night, they've got the great big comedy thing, which they go around and they tell everybody, you cannot videotape what you're about to see.
And every year you show me that videotape.
I do. That is not true. A petty, petty fucker. Petty, petty.